Welcome back to the Bad Podcast, episode 32. My name is Amelia. I am an art director in Chicago.
And I'm Brian. I'm a copywriter also in Chicago. And today we welcome back a guest. Last time Andy Pearson was on the show, he was the GCD at McKinney LA, doing a lot of good work. But basically, like the week after we talked, he started moving over to his current position, which is VP of Creative at Liquid Death, only like the most kind of creative, ambitious, nonstop brand like out there right now. And they just have so many good spots. They've got the, you know, the kids party spot where they're all like partying with Liquid Death, like even though they're underage. They've got the they have a spot featuring one of the like most famous sex workers out there.
Yeah, that one's a cool one. They also have one, it's more of a stunt where they had a witch put a curse on, I think, the Rams for the Super Bowl. And that's just like something really funny and fun.
And they also, this brand has also, and we talk about this in the show with Andy, so we'll try not to, you know, beat this to Liquid Death, but that's a terrible joke. Anyways, this brand has made like cultural moments. When they infused paint with some of Tony Hawk's blood, and then that went online. This was shortly after the backlash of Lil Nas X making those Satan shoes from Nike, and which had all of you know, Christian America sort of up in arms and, you know, calling him a Satanist and stuff. And so he said something about the Tony Hawk blood board, and some of the back, I think he said, nah, he tweaking, which kind of overnight became like, part of modern vernacular. So I don't know. That's just a crazy idea to me, like to be working on a brand that like shapes the way we speak. Like that's just cool shit. It's cool shit. And we got to talk to the head cool shit maker today, which was amazing.
Let's get into the episode.
Yeah. Enjoy episode 32, guys, with Andy Pearson, VP of Creative at Liquid Death.
Okay. Everybody ready?
Bad, 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 bad,
discuss media.
How are you? Are you at a science lab in Antarctica right now?
Yeah, I'm in some sort of like bunker. This is like literally COVID makeshift office that is now 2.5 years later just an actual office. That's also a children's art studio and a laundry room and a pantry.
Wow.
So super great. Moved to LA. There's so much space. Everyone can have literally hundreds of square feet to live in. It's great.
Yeah, and the cost of living is super cheap.
Yeah.
So you've got that going for you too.
It's only going down. Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
All right. So Andy Pearson, thanks so much for coming back to the Bad Podcast and joining us. You were in LA last time, just like you are now, but I think basically right after we spoke, you shifted roles and have been the VP of creative at Liquid Death ever since, right?
Yeah, I actually, when I was talking to you guys last, I was like in talks with Liquid Death at the time. And I was like, I feel bad. I can't say anything. It's going to make this podcast obsolete in like a month. Yeah. So yeah, I was in talks last time we chatted and then officially moved over in July of last year.
Cool. Yeah, well, yeah. No worries at all. I re-listened to our talk this morning from last time, and it was a great conversation, no fault on you withholding that very exciting news.
Yeah,
Liquid Death is one of the like biggest, I mean, it's coveted, you know, creative by the whole ad industry. What's it been like?
Fun, in a word, I guess. It's funny. My wife Eliza Bayless is a freelance copywriter and creative director And she sent me this text the other day. So she works on, you know, all kinds across a bunch of different agencies all the time. And she sent me this text. She was like, she's like, Liquid Death is referenced in literally every brief I get now. So congrats, you guys fucking made it. She's like, it's literally the only thing people will talk about in briefings. So that felt pretty great. It's funny because I think the reason why, well, one of many reasons why that we have the success we do is really kind of like clearing out all the bullshit and just making work. And I think that's sort of the most, that's in some ways really the most enjoyable thing about it. I mean, it really, to be honest, it really is a dream gig for me. But there's the work, and then there's also just like the pleasantness of actually getting to work sort of unencumbered and just moving quickly, doing stuff that we want, not overthinking, not over encumbering ourselves. And, you know, the business as a whole, the concept behind the business and the marketing itself, I think everything is looked at from a very kind of outsider perspective on, hey, all the stuff that we all accept all the time is actually just bullshit, and there's a much better way to do it, and we could have a lot more fun doing it. And so that really, you know, it literally came from the initial idea for Liquid Death itself, and then obviously filters down all the way into the work that we get to do and the way we do it. And I think, you know, it really comes from Mike Cesario, our co-founder and CEO, was like an ad dude, right? We actually crossed over briefly at Crispin. He was at Humanaut kind of right before my and Liza's stint there. And then I actually freelanced for him and here and there for a number of years after that. So we kind of crossed paths a lot of times, but I think, you know, having a CEO that is a former ad creative is pretty much unheard of. I mean, I don't keep up with the business world. I can't think of too many highly successful businesses that are run by a former ad creative as a CEO, but because of that, it takes all of the stuff that we all know is wrong and that we don't like. And he was like, I'm just going to run a business and you know, essentially like a small agency, like in a way that fixes all that stuff. It's very funny to me to be on every once in a while just checking on Fishbowl, like, what is happening on Fishbowl? Not that I care, and it is a dumpster fire, and yeah, people are so angry. And I mean, it's always been like that. I mean, before Fishbowl is Agency Spy, and you know, before that it was, you know, it's always been there. But it just makes me bummed that there are so many people that are so passionately dissatisfied with their with the industry. And so it really does, I feel like I'm in a super fortunate situation to be somewhere where it's just really as fun as it seems. And you know, there's kind of no layers to things either.
Yeah, completely. And you mentioned getting around that bullshit and like really diving deep into the work. Can you talk a little bit about what that bullshit is, and then your favorite work that you've gotten to do because it doesn't exist where you are?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just the way we look at everything. I mean, we get like, look, we're a startup. We don't have much money. And so, you know, we approach things in a very critical eye in terms of spend on, you know, it gets into kind of like some of the marketing strategy and stuff, but we just, you know, we know that we can't compete, and B, we don't want to compete by like shoving ads down people's throats all the time, right? We'd rather make, we always talk about entertainment over marketing. And I think like the ad industry is so focused on making an ad that then will run and it'll change people's minds somehow magically by, if you have the right media mix and run enough times, people will know your tagline or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's like, we'd rather just make stuff that people want to see. And, you know, I think we're lucky because we're a brand that it works for, but it's like, we make stuff that people just want to watch or play with or mess with or buy or whatever that thing is. And like, that's our marketing. That's all we need to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I talk about getting people to know their tagline, like, I mean, we have a kind of a bunch of different taglines. We have like two different logos even. I mean, we don't like, it's the only brand I can think of where there's like, we just have two wildly different logos that we just decide to use. There's real reasons why when we choose to use one over the other, but we use them kind of at random. I mean, we don't have a brand book. Like, we just, it's very much done by like intuition and like just knowing the brand and knowing what we're trying to do with it inside and out. The thing I realized as of late is, I've said this a couple of times to people, and it's like more than like a brand, I kind of think of Liquid Death as a character, because we really do try to, it's about entertainment, right? And so like, if I think of the brand as a character, then rather than like trying to memorize a bunch of like brands, like this is how our brand talks, this is how our brand doesn't talk like this, our spirit animal is Jimmy Fallon or whatever, like instead of doing all that stuff, I try to understand it as like this kind of this full character. And then once you're in that headspace as that character, then it's really easy to figure out what you do next. That's I think the other funny thing about it too is like, there's no like grinding to try to find the idea. It's usually super obvious or at least very quick when we're working on something. We're like, oh yeah, if we're doing X thing, then we would just do like this. There's the idea. And so literally, you know, there'll be stuff that we do and we figure out the idea in a matter of like 5 to 10 minutes. And then we just go make that in like 2 weeks or something. Because we know, like, if you get in the head of the character, you're like, I understand I'm writing for this character and I know what their world is and I know their perspective and I know how they move through and interact with people. And so like, when we want to do this thing or this, we want to do a collaboration, it's just like, oh, how would the character like do that? And also I think the character is very, like thinking of it that way too. I think Liquid Death is really nuanced. Mm-hmm. I think like humor and silliness and all this stuff can feel very easy and can kind of feel cheap. But I think, you know, we really do sweat all the little tiny details, and the choices we make are very, very sort of deeply thought out in every piece of it. And so it is really hard to get in that headspace. But once you do, you kind of start to uncover all the places you can go with it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm curious, since you guys are like brand side and you're basically in advertising first almost. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that Mike had like more followers than Awkwafina on Liquid Death before he had water in a can. So does that mean you guys have built up your in-house studio or are you still using directors and DPs and folks like outside of the Liquid Death team?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say we are extremely lean. There are not many of us, but kind of on purpose, because you know it is hard to get in that space, and we want to keep it tight, and we want to like, when you add too many people to the process, it becomes a lot harder to do. It's sort of a different game. And again, we're startups, so we have to move fast. But in terms of like, in terms of using outside talent and that sort of thing, I think, you know, we aspire to do it all ourselves.
Yeah,
this is the way I'll put it.
You're obligated when you have employees to keep the employees busy, right? And when
that's not a problem.
No, but I'm saying it is if you have a fat team. If your team is bigger than your needs, then you're coming up with busy work. You're doing like, I mean, it's what we see agencies
have. Yeah.
You know?
Right. You're just making decks basically forever. Yeah.
So I have a random question. So just based on research I've heard and just like the way like people our age are trending, alcohol is kind of becoming something people are stepping away from. Edibles are getting more popular, that kind of shit. Are you guys at all trying to make water an after five beverage? Like, is that something that you guys are trying to start doing? Because you guys have like this badass lifestyle water product. I feel like it's beyond just drinking water.
Before 21 beverage.
Yeah. So I'm just curious, like, are you watching that trend and seeing how not only can you make water this really fucking cool thing to drink, but like it's a healthier option too. It's like you're going out and you're partying with water.
I mean, that's definitely, you know, part of it for sure. I think you know, our whole goal is to make health and sustainability more fun. And I think there's a lot of, you know, the grounding for the brand was that it was like every health or healthy or sustainable brand is targeted at, you know, an NPR Whole Foods crew essentially. Right. And I mean, I think, you know, the idea was to, you know, take all the fun that all these other beer and energy drinks and junk food brands have and just direct it at something that is literally the healthiest thing on earth, which is water. Right. And so, it's cool. We get stories all the time. We are, I think, quite popular in like the sober curious community. We get emails from parents all the time that like, oh my God, my son was addicted to energy drinks and now he, you know, will drink Liquid Death instead. And like, thank you so much. And so I think, it's definitely one way that people like to use the brand. I think the cool thing about the brand, like I said before, is it's really nuanced in that. I think there's a lot of, to go back to kind of like the entertainment analogy, we have a lot of different storylines going all the time. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly one of them that people latch onto and they like, they will run with that. Like, you know, we were mentioned on this podcast, this like investing podcast a couple of months back, and their whole take on the brand was that it was this brand for when you don't want to drink alcohol. And they didn't get any deeper into the other parts of the brand than that, which is really funny because I don't think we really talk about, we never talk about like, you know, sober stuff. Our Instagram feed, we post like cocktails made out of our drinks because you can also use it for that. So I think again, it's like the brand can be a lot of different things depending on how you come in. And there are, more people coming in on this sort of like, you know, more alcohol-free side of things as well recently.
Do you think, it's really crazy cool that you guys do have those different narratives kind of going all at the same time. Do you think that Liquid Death is uniquely set up to hold that? Or do you think that that's something that a lot of brands could be doing if they had the cojones?
No, that's a good question. It's one that I think about sometimes, but like, can you replicate this? I think so. I think if you're willing to make a lot of other concessions as a brand, and by concessions, I mean, like I said, we have different logos we use. We have like different taglines. Like if you're willing to get, again, going back to all the like sort of artifice that, and all the accepted rules of marketing that we all abide by, or that marketing departments abide by. And again, like we are founded and run by a former ad creative. So like, I mean, you guys know you have ideas for stuff all the time. Like, I think that's part of the fun of it is that we're like, hey, we could go do this. Now we could go do this. Now we can do this. And so there's, there's sort of a excitement that we can go do all these things. And so, yeah, I think it's possible. I think you just have to like give up some of the other accepted sides of like what makes good marketing today and free yourself up from that. And then, yeah, it's for sure doable. You just have, and also the other thing I'll say is like, it's baked in inherently into the brand, like our sustainability angle, our health angle, like you can't invent that stuff. It's all in there from the beginning and from the product. So it that's the other thing, is it has to be genuine. You can't like, I don't know why my mind always goes to like Ritz as the brand I want to pick on, but it's like bad dry crackers in a sleeve in like a weird like brown sleeve of plastic. But like, I'm like, you couldn't be like Ritz and then suddenly have like a sustainability message and you're like, that's what we're all about. And that's like one of the things, like, you know, it doesn't work. It has to be tied to some real truth.
Yeah.
Well, and you guys are uniquely set up. You mentioned this because you're selling water. Like everybody drinks water. Everybody has a very profound and basic relationship with water. It's not like you can't survive without water, which also funny that it's liquid death. And I'm just thinking to like a pasta brand or like Ritz crackers, like it's really hard to break down that basic relationship and that basic need that people have with these other brands. And I immediately thought of Lululemon. I don't know, but like, it's hard to come down to like the basic relationship people have with these things and then create an insatiable want around it. You know, water, it's like intrinsically combined, right? You want it, but you also need it. So
yeah,
like,
for sure. Well, yeah. And that, I mean, that you're right. I mean, I think that the one unique thing is, you know, most people don't drink enough water. So that's part of, you know, murder your thirst, and it's about hydration and that side of things too. So the funny thing about that, you know, it's like, we're not like, you have to drink water. So we're going to hold it hostage in our cans. That's not like, that's not the angle. But the really funny thing is, I'll see comments all of the time that pop up that are like, they're selling water back to us. This is like peak end of Western civilization.
No.
And I'm like, dude, have you seen bottled water before?
Have you seen, right?
Yeah.
Like, have you not been paying attention to the, like, it blows my mind. It's so funny because, you know, it's like, it's water that was put in a different form factor. And then suddenly everyone's like, what the fuck? They're selling water to us. And it's like, yes, but also other people have been doing it, and they've been doing it in plastic bottles that are now filling our oceans and rivers
and landfills
and bodies. Makes it, and
yeah,
it's so crazy. You know, the original, back when the brand was getting kind of the little germination of the idea, the idea was to really, and again, I wasn't there, so I'm retelling the story. It was about like, again, making water more fun and sustainable and putting it. And so it's like, oh, we'll make it look like beer. We'll put it in tall boy cans. Mm-hmm. And I think Mike was digging into it, and I was like, well, why is all beer in plastic bottles to begin with? And it's essentially because years and years of marketing have supposedly proven that people need to see the water in the can to know that it's pure, right?
And the problem is all that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's literally, and it's like, well, you also drink like beer out of a can and you don't know what's in there. You drink all these other things out of cans that are opaque that you don't need to see. But somehow water was, you know, there's this need to see it. So we have to put it in plastic bottles. And then suddenly, I mean, so literally when you look at part of the single-use plastic problem, it's marketing. It is literally a problem created by the marketing industry complex. And that was something that I kind of like dawned on me as I was working on the brand. I was like, fuck, we have done this. It is our fault. And so I think that's also part of what we see as liquid death is like, if marketing got us into the shit, maybe we can also begin to dig ourselves out of it too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that so much. And it, oh man, I could gush about Liquid Death a lot because they have been
the water.
Right, exactly. They have been selling water back to us forever. And it's like, it's this like, it's such an American thing that they did. And I won't get too conspiracy theorist here, but like
the podcast, you can.
Right.
That's literally what it's for.
It's true.
Conspiracy cast. Exactly.
Yeah.
But bottled water helped begin the recycling movement in America. They fueled some of the money for it to put the triangle on things, and
right.
And they sort of greenwashed before greenwashing was a thing. But when it comes down to it, most of the bottles aren't recyclable, and a lot of Americans don't recycle.
Yeah.
And this can, I hate to use the word disruption, but it's like crazy that no one else ever thought of it. And then on the back, this all this amazing marketing, I think Liquid Death deserves all the hype.
Yeah. I mean, you're exactly right. That's what we talk a lot about, is like plastic recycling is a myth. You know, the vast majority of plastic that you and we all throw into a recycling bin can't be recycled. We work with a number of, you know, plastic pollution related and water related nonprofits. That's where, you know, 10% of our proceeds go. And so one of them is Five Guys. And so their stat is that only 9% of plastic gets recycled. And they actually just, I think yesterday or 2 days ago, I'm actually going to look it up. I think they revised it down to something like 3% now. Wow. I don't want to use that stat if it's in, sorry, 5%. Yeah. So according to their research, only 5% of plastic is actually recycled. And so the crazy thing is it's actually better to just dump your plastic in a trash can than to recycle it. Then it has to go to a facility. Then it gets trucked back. It actually is more environmentally unfriendly to recycle all that plastic that won't actually get recycled, which is pretty
insane.
Dark, if you think about it. But so again, yeah, I mean, we're really just trying to get people to realize some of that stuff. And you know, the thing I get excited about too is, you know, I'm on the crunchier side of like probably advertising in general and marketing and Liquid Death. You know, I spend a lot of time outdoors. I'm involved in like climate change nonprofits and stuff like that. But so the thing that gets me hyped is that we have this whole death to plastic mission, and again, like storyline, I guess you could call it, with Liquid Death, and people, when I see people pick it up and run with it and posting about it, that would never normally, you know, you wouldn't assume, at least would normally be posting and getting excited about like a death to plastic mission. That's what gets me hyped, is that we're actually reaching people in places that have, again, been ignored by the health movement, by the sustainability movement, by all the other places that are just speaking against the same pool of people. And we're actually bringing a lot of new people in and kind of getting them aware of the issue.
Amelia, have you heard of the game that's flooding the timeline and timesheets across the land?
Wordle?
Wordle could literally... Okay, that's a great guess, actually, but I'm talking about Wash-A-Pig.
Oh, yeah, you really like that game. I've seen your post on Twitter.
I love the game, Amelia. It's exactly my job, but fun.
Is this a commercial?
It's a public service announcement to the ad community, all right? It's headlines without deadlines. It's like if advertising let you be creative but never actually made any of the work.
That's exactly like advertising.
But it's fun, okay?
I can see that you're passionate about this.
Baddies, run. do not walk to washapig.com. Okay. Order a deck of your very own. Thank me later. Washapig is one of the best new things that I'm doing during the time that I lie about on my timesheets. It reminds me what it's all about. It's that coffee-scented what if question that gets ad nerds like us out of bed in the morning.
Well, you heard it here, folks. Washapig. Brian really likes it.
I really like it.
Can we talk a little bit about the strategies you guys use to get people aware? Because the stunts Liquid Death pull are just awesome and really fun.
And well, just alongside that, timeline wise, I'd love to know like what your first project with them was, because we've seen all their advertising, but we're not totally sure.
Yeah,
Andy Pearson's
where I came in.
Yeah.
First project and favorite project. Go.
God, my first was really the Tony Hawk or the Bloodboard. Yes. That was, I can't take credit for the initial idea. That was already in the works when I got here, but yeah, that was like week two or three. I'm like standing on his giant ramp down into his warehouse. And I was like, shoot, you know, we're just taking his blood and walking away. And I was like, is this my job?
Yeah.
So that was pretty wild. Just the insanity of that, the way that thing, you know, really kind of got out of hand and blew up in a way that we,
right.
You know, we're very, very happy to see.
With the little mass, addition, right? There was that pop culture boost.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there was the Nahi tweaking thing. Right. And then that like almost shut down Instagram because it was all the bots in the comments were just like commenting Nahi tweaking. And then after that we got Tony and Lil Nas X together to shoot a video to like show there wasn't any bad beef. And so we actually, there was like four big crazy moments throughout that campaign, which was just kind of wild to see the internet pick up something and run with it. Favorite projects, I don't know, they're all so different.
A lot of real good stuff.
What's your favorite story like from some of these experiences? Is there something that stuck with you through the process of creating these wild fucking ideas?
Besides standing on top of Tony Hawk's indoor
and taking his blood, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's kind of one of that for everything we do. It's like the campaign we just launched right before Earth Day, Don't F the Planet, with Sherita Ville, who's one of the preeminent adult film actresses on the internet.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we shot that in the Valley with a whole, you know, a crew from the industry in a house that was, you know, well known and used. And, you know, that was a great shoot and everyone there was really amazing. And it was just kind of a cool blending of worlds, I think, for both sides, where, you know, I think people from that industry don't get treated often with, you know, the respect that a lot of like other people do. And if you think about it, like those folks are out there shooting way more than anybody else ever will. And so we, you know, used their crew because we wanted to be, you know, we wanted to be true to the industry and use them. And they were super appreciative and really great to work with and amazing and did amazing stuff. And, but yeah, same thing. It's like, oh, we're just shooting in this porn house in the Valley with this whole porn crew. And I was like, this is another first there. So like every, you know, everything we do has kind of, it's like, oh, we're just going to this witch's apothecary here and getting him to like curse the other team for the Super Bowl and then send him to the Super Bowl. It's like everything has a moment where you're like, you step back, you're like, yeah, this is the most insane thing we've done since the last time, which was the most insane thing we've done. You know,
it's beautiful to watch, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It really is. I watched that for the first time this morning. The one, the Don't Fuck the Planet with Sherry. Yep. Yeah. The age on that is a trip.
Yeah.
The logo animated.
And
logo.
technically now you've worked in porn. So
it's true.
There you go.
I hadn't thought of it that way. Yeah.
That ultra runner body finally paid off, you know?
Good for you, man.
That was
truly well-rounded.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. And there was the underage partying, the kids.
Oh yeah. The super. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I forgot about the Super Bowl.
Well, except for the curse.
Right. So that one, you're kind of leaning into that to the beer aesthetics, right?
Yeah. 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 That was fun. We just kind of watched a lot of like old beer commercials from like the 90s, and then you know that was fun because you know, I think we got a lot, obviously, you know, people on both sides of loving it or hating it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was honestly the most wholesome thing I've ever been a part of. You know, it was literally, you know, in a house up in Studio City for, you know, 6 hours with a bunch of kids dancing around and drinking water. And it was literally like the silliest, most wholesome thing I've ever been a part of.
Yeah. That was also, you know, pretty traditional for Liquid Death. You guys have been minting NFTs and you make hella merch, and you have all these things where people go out and find the ad kind of. But that one was traditional in the middle of something someone's watching. Were there any other major differences other than maybe just like watching the content, making sure it's like primetime friendly?
Like anything else that we did that was sort of non-traditional with it?
Well, or were there any moments where you're like, oh yeah, this is what normal advertising is. I kind of forget it as we're doing these fun things.
No, because like, that was probably the second thing I did here. Mm. And that was, we shot that in August, I want to say, August or September, I think. And again, this was like kind of an idea that had been, was like pretty simple. It was like, hey, we'll shoot a house party with kids in water. And there wasn't all, you know, we didn't overthink it. We didn't, you know, I just, the whole Super Bowl thing, I've, this is the first spot I've ever, Super Bowl spot I've ever really done, fully. And I just, again, going back to the very beginning of this conversation, like, I just think Super Bowl is the worst thing in advertising. It just, I've never wanted to have a spot. It just, we've all been there where you're like, all right, it's July, we're getting briefed on Super Bowl. And then, you know, you're like, fuck, we're going to work on Super Bowl over Christmas. Like, we're going to keep presenting ideas. We're literally going to keep working like during the holiday break. And then it's going to be January and we won't have a spot yet because no one likes anything. And then we're going to like have to like do an emergency shoot in like last week of January. Like, that's happened so many times. Right. And it's just it's such a drain on an agency and the creatives and everyone involved. And it's just, at the end of the day, you're like, it's for a spot. And so I think the thing I love about this was we shot it, like I said, like late summer. It was very quick. We were like, okay, we like put it together. We shot it. And then that was sort of it, and just sat on it more or less for like months, and then, you know, just put it out. It was, again, just not overthinking things. And
right.
We also hid a very small QR code in one frame of the spot, a single frame, and in the end card. And so if you found it, you were taken to a page where we're selling an entire pallet of Liquid Death for the price of a single can.
Damn.
So we had three of those for sale and people found them pretty quickly, but it was obviously the year of the QR code, but we kind of, ours was quite sneaky, and you know, we it kind of got gobbled up in all the other press of the other stuff, but
Yeah.
Was the woman in the spot actually pregnant?
No.
Damn.
It's called movie magic.
Yeah, yeah.
We have the technology to do that kind of thing now.
It would have been funny if she was.
I think we developed that technology originally for Arnold Schwarzenegger, right? To be Mr. Mom in 1991. No, I actually don't even know when that came out. I was going to make this parallel earlier, but you guys are kind of you kind of have the Ryan Reynolds setup, because you're your own client. Yeah. And your advertising forward, very idea forward.
Yeah, I kind of lost my job to Ryan Reynolds. Actually, it's funny you say that.
Maximum Effort took a client or something.
Yeah, yeah. I was at Mint Mobile. I was the CMO of Mint Mobile is one of my old Taco Bell clients. Aaron North, really smart dude, and he took over there as when I was freelancing, he kind of reached out and we started doing work. Liza and I started doing work for him and kind of, you know, became part of their little go-to crew on freelance. And then one day he was like, oh, or I saw the news or something that Ryan Reynolds bought Mint Mobile. I'm like, holy shit, that's amazing, man. He's like, yeah, it's going to be a game changer for us. And then we stopped getting calls. And I was like, fuck you, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, it was a game changer for you too.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, I mean, amen. I guess if I'm going to lose a job to someone, I might as well lose to Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah. So
that's my Ryan Reynolds story.
Was this a McKinney time era?
No, just freelance.
Oh, okay.
He's just in freelance before McKinney.
So you ended up not being at McKinney that long before the Liquid Death thing came along. When we talked to you, you seemed, very happy with it. You guys did that Protect Our Winners thing, which was beautiful work. And that means a lot to you as a outdoors enthusiast. Yeah. Amelia and I have only been at FCB 6 or 7 months and we're moving on. Despite having a great time, what are the things that you weigh out when you're making these sorts of moves, and how do you rationalize it and whatnot to yourself?
I mean, I'm not a very good person at pushing myself for change. I guess like that's for my whole life. I'm always I was at Crispin for 5 years and kind of felt that Crispin was kind of, I had kind of felt that the agency had changed around me in a way that I did not like and wasn't what I had signed up for initially. And love that place to death. I mean, my entire career and friendships and my whole freelance career to the connections I made and friends we made there.
Right.
But that was really more of a realizing that the Crispin I'd signed up for had, or at least the one in LA when I moved out to the LA office was not still present. And so that was a realization that kind of led to that. I think I really weighed the Liquid Death thing because exactly. I think I was at McKinney for something like 16 months or something like that, 15 or 16 months. And, I was really wanting to build something and I really liked the people I only had one creative team there, a writer and art director that were interns that I had to beg internally to extend their internship and then had to beg to hire them on. I was like, I can't be the only creative here. And then they actually just won the Cannes Young Lion for US last week for digital, or a couple weeks back, which is awesome. So I'm super pumped for them. But I had, I say that because I was, sort of building up a team and wanted to do that. And I was very grateful to what McKinney had done for me on a number of things. But the obviously the Liquid Death offer was just it was too crazy not to pass up. And then the thing that really sealed it, I was thinking about it and I was like, if I don't take this job, I literally never want to hear the name Liquid Death. I never want to see it again. I'm gonna have to unfollow on all the social, like I never want to hear that name again if I don't take this job, because yeah. I'm gonna be so jealous and see all the stuff that they're doing. And I think the moment I had that realization, I was like, oh, fuck, I have to take it. I was like, they're like, that would just be, because I knew how big it was gonna be. And I was like, I'm just gonna be literally surrounded by my regret for the entire rest of my life if I don't take that. And so that was like, it just all was like, yep, yeah, do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You just
have regret fuel all your decisions, I guess is what the threat of future regret.
Well, but yeah. that's what they instinct. Say, right? Well, I don't know if that's instinct.
I think so. I think you need to follow what, you know, is important to you. And that's what you did. Like you follow your yeah. instincts. I feel like if you hadn't gotten that initial tingle, you wouldn't have taken it. Like, yeah. And yeah. I think for younger people, it's kind of hard to follow that. Cause I think for someone like you, who's very established in their career, confident in their abilities, it's a little bit easier to have faith in yourself and take that jump. But someone who's starting out, it's not as cut and dry. So it's good to hear from somebody who like you, who's like, yeah, where I took this because I felt like this was the right decision for me. And like, yeah. ultimately that's what I find
that most of the time, or I've gotten to a space where I want to take the stuff that feels like something that I wouldn't have sought out. Like, that's why I took the McKinney job, was because I was like, oh, go to this like tiny shop that is not established and there's no creatives there and it's all like very digital and content based, or that's what the LA office was, mm-hmm. at least, and like try to just build this thing from scratch. And I was like, that's not something I would have thought to look for. And so that's exactly why I actually ended up taking it in the first place. So I think that's also the kind of the thing that I think it's easy to just like keep jumping to the next agency or the next, you know, people that everyone has a different career path and has a different career philosophy. I'm not out here trying to like jump and like get to that one account that I'm trying to get to, or like just if I can just get to that one place where it, then I'm going to be happy over there. I see a lot of people trying to do that. And I think if anything, I'm like, want to do the opposite. I want to put myself in situations where I'm like, I wouldn't have thought to do that. Or like, this is probably not the thing that I would choose to do. So like, that's exactly why, because I wouldn't think to do it in the first place.
Is it the spontaneity or is it the newness, the like, I'll learn something new.
This yeah.
muscle.
Yeah. It's more that it was like, oh, with freelance, you know, doing freelance for 3 or 4 years, I learned so much from that. And I just saw the inside of so many different places and met so many people and had all these different experiences, got more confident in myself as a creative. What's that?
I said as a taxpayer as well. I feel like freelance is yeah. more complicated.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why you hire someone for that. But like, yeah, because yeah, everything was, I was like, okay, now I'm going to learn freelance, like do that. And so you kind of milk all of the things you can out of that experience. And then you're like, okay, what's the next? Yeah, I actually get, it was funny. Deutsch was great. And that's where I was after Crispin and before I went freelance. And they started bringing me in and had me do a lot of, they basically, I was doing so much freelance there also remotely pre-pandemic that they ended up, they were like, hey, we want to bring you back in and employ you. But basically as like, almost an internal freelancer that would just bop around on whatever, like basically use you on whatever is cool and needs help. And you don't have to be tied to account and you don't have to deal with all the bullshit. You'd literally just get to be like a high level creative on stuff, because that's what I was doing freelance. That was the beauty of freelance, is like, oh, I don't have to deal with clients and I can just do the creative work that I got into this business to do in the first place. Yeah. And, And so they basically were like, you can do that, but you can come back and work for us full time, and it can be remote. You don't even ever have to come in the office. Again, pre-pandemic, so this is kind of a wild idea. And then the McKinney thing happened at the same time. And I was like, okay, I could either continue doing the same thing. I'm literally the exact same thing I'm doing, but much cushier and easier. Or I could like take this kind of crazy leap and try something that is totally out of my league and will evolve me as a, you know, further in a career and skills that I don't have yet. And so that was that, like, sort of every step of the way has been a conscious decision to do that, rather than like stay in the lane that I've been in.
Right. More power to you. I feel like, you know, the American way is like definitely built on creature comforts and self-disillusionment and things like that. So
you can always stay in the same path. So like, if that's the case, then why not try something else? And if you don't like it, you can always go back.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
this is just a logistical curiosity. When I've never freelanced. When you're freelancing, do you cap it at a single project at a time, or were you like doing one thing for this agency, one thing for that one, maybe?
No, it's called double dipping. It's called triple dipping. I know people that have quadruple dips. Maybe some. I think there's somebody who's quintuple dipped. Not advisable. It's kind of funny. So when we were freelancing, we were freelancing for Humanaut and a lot, and they were like, hey, why don't you just join us, but we can't pay you your full salary. We're in Tennessee, we're small. Mm-hmm. We can only pay you 60% of your salary. And so we're like, okay, well, why don't we just give you 60% of our time? And then, so we kind of worked at this like funny employment model, again, pre-pandemic, that was like, we'll give you 60% of our time for 60% of the salary, we get benefits. So we're full-time, we're employees, but not full-time employees. And then we would do freelance gigs beyond that, on top of that. So we would kind of juggle a lot of other projects, but we, you know, Humanaut was kind of our number one that we had to do because we were actually employed there, but only to a certain percentage. And then quarterly we would go out for a number of weeks and sit in Chattanooga and work there and then come back home. So it was, you know, we kind of together decided we wanted to develop a more unique employment model that we didn't really know of other people trying. And, you know, it was great. It was awesome. I think it was beneficial for everyone. And, you know, it always is until it isn't, and it got to a certain point where it didn't make sense. But I'm super glad it happened. We did it that way, and you know, got to do a lot of really cool work with them as well.
Yeah. The idea of like just being hired for a single project and not getting like meetinged to death all day, before you even get working on it.
Dude, I mean, it's really an unfair advantage to all the creatives at the agency. I had something where, because look, it's the only thing you're working on. They're like, hey, we need you for a project. And if you're at an agency, you're like, hey, we got to do this social thing. And then you got to sit in the strategy meeting and this is happening. And so like, as a freelancer, you're like, hey, I worked for a day and here's a pile of ideas. And so it'll blow people's brains. I had one time where we were working on a pitch on a Sunday. We were all weekend. We were on a Sunday. The CCO came in. We like looked at all the work. Meeting went well. He turned to me and he's like, hey man, thanks so much for coming in over the weekend and working. And I was like, in my head, I'm like, with a room of all the other creatives that work there. And I was like, I'm the only one getting paid for being here. Everyone else is just expected to be here. And I was like, I don't give a shit. I'm making a bunch of money today, but nobody else was. And it was just like, you definitely have an unfair advantage a lot of times as a freelancer. There are disadvantages for sure that you don't know the brand and people, and it's, you know, wild and confusing, but in terms of just like doing the work, yeah, you just are like focused on one thing, and then that's why you can dump on it.
I imagine a moment like that kind of shaped what kind of leader you are, huh?
Yeah, I mean, going back, I think, you know, to circle back, it's like, we should just all be conscious of this, of the space we're making for ourselves, you know, for personal fulfillment, for our careers, for the brands we're working on for our team, like that's kind of been the thing. And I think that's why I feel at home at Liquid Death, is because it's really, I think people don't take moments to step outside of their themselves and their situations enough to consider that maybe there is a better way to do things, or maybe there's a way to reevaluate a situation and come at it in a dramatically different solution. And that, I guarantee that solution is probably way better than the one that you didn't spend time thinking on before. And so I think that's the important thing, is like finding these little times to pause and kind of pull yourself out of it and consider that there's probably a better way to do everything.
Yeah.
Right. Renegotiating those moments to become protocol in like.
Totally. Yeah. Water. Plastic bottles are the way to sell water. It's like, what if they weren't? You know, it's like, it's pretty easy actually when you think about it, right? You just have to like have some, a little bit of time to stop and think about it. Hey, right. This agency changed around me and it doesn't believe in the things that I believed in when I joined it. Okay, maybe it's time to leave. You know, there's it can happen pretty quickly. It just takes like that one kind of little moment, and then at least for me, and then it's like, okay, that seems right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with before we allow you the rest of your day?
I am. I'm curious what sort of philosophies you might have stumbled across or been meditating on recently since we last talked. I think you have you added a child to your family since we last spoke? Am I wrong about that? You have two children.
You are wrong about that. I was like, have I added a new child? it feels like that. No, just two. That's probably too many.
Well, no, I just, you have parenthood, full-time job.
Yeah.
You have this incredible hobby, ultra running, like 40 miles at a time. That's crazy. And then you're leading one of the biggest brands on planet Earth. So
what the fuck is wrong with you?
No, it's an
yes.
Yes.
Also.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, I'm not good at moderation, I guess. It's sort of the other thing, is I don't do moderation very well. So I mean, in terms of philosophy, I think like again, I'm curious about when you don't conform to what you're supposed to, you know. It's like, to talk about ultra running, it's like I ran my first marathon and I finished and I was like, okay, I know I can do that, so I don't need to do that again. So it was like a year later I ran my first 50 miler. I think that's the exciting part, is to just kind of keep pushing the boundaries of, because you just find interesting things on the edges there. You know, I did the last thing I did before Liquid Death was I ran this race called Ball State, which is a 500 kilometer, which is 314 miles across the state of Tennessee, with like on the side of the, literally on the shoulder of highways with zero support. So you just going to like gas stations, eating like Rice Krispie treats and milk to like survive for like, you know, 4 to 10 days out in the wild of Tennessee on your own.
I'm sorry, milk?
And I threw it, like, I just realized it was so hot. It happens in July. And it, so it's the literally the butthole of Satan.
Yeah.
It's so hot and humid. And you're just like need to constantly drink water. And there's no healthy options in Tennessee in gas stations. Like there's no, like I was training here and I was going to 7-Eleven. I was like, oh, they've got like a green smoothie and they've got some string cheese and there's some things I can eat. I would like kind of do some test runs out here. And then I got to Tennessee and I was like, oh, yeah. There's nothing here. And so I quickly realized, it's like literally the healthiest thing that I can find that has protein, it are like these, you know, little crappy jugs of whole milk. And so I was just like down in whole milk for days. But yeah, I mean, you just, there's so many wild experiences I had doing that, basically running for 4.5 days straight through Tennessee, just like a looking like an insane person. That again, it's like you have to kind of put yourself out there to find these things that no one else gets to experience. And so I think, you know, same thing. It's like you can build a brand, or you can try to build a brand like Liquid Death, which is just going to do something totally unlike anyone else. And at least to me, that's way more fun to do.
Yeah. It's awesome. And I sort of see some balance in it, right? Like I feel like something as physically taxing and that pushes you so hard can be a nice counterbalance to I assume even at Liquid Death you're working on a computer.
Yeah.
Not, you know, so
no, it's why I started it. I was at Crispin and I kind of was just like, well, we were just very unhealthy, everyone was, and we were living in Boulder, and I just started running, and I found that it was like such an extreme balance to my job, where I was working literally 14 hours a day. And I was like, well, maybe on the weekends I'll go run for six or seven hours at a time. And they like weirdly balanced, you're exactly right, they like balanced each other out in their extremeness. Yeah. And it actually gave me a lot of good boundaries between my job and times when I have to be like, no, I'm going to leave my computer and just go into the mountains for the next 6 hours and do that. Yeah. So it was cool.
I think it's common for, I'm so sorry, I'm monopolizing here. but a lot of people, especially in this industry, default to things like drinking for that counterbalance, but it's not a counterbalance, because then you just wake up for that work day with anxiety from the drink, right? You know, and it's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that where you're going?
Yes, I was going to bring up, as someone who is also very physically active, I and have been since like high school, I got into that, and like in college, that's how I was able to like keep myself balanced between two majors and then all that shit. Like I cannot say enough about having a physical activity outlet that you can rely on and like feel good about yourself at the end. And just like having that understanding that your body can do so much more than what your job is. And like having that physical relationship with yourself that is built on that kind of outlet. So yeah. Definitely high praise for ultra running, but also any sort of movement.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I do next to none, and I teeter along the edge of a breakdown at all times. So I think more proof. Cool. Well, Andy Pearson, thank you so much for joining us again. We're excited to see what you and Liquid Death give to the world, and wish you the best. Hope you don't, you know, hope all the 200 mile runs go swimmingly.
Thanks. They won't, but that's the fun. That's exactly why you do it.